Dr. Joseph Catania, whose presentation is entitled Funding Restrictions in HIV Behavioral Intervention Impact Program Fidelity. Dr. Catania is professor emeritus from the University of California, San Francisco, and professor of public health at Oregon State University. He's been conducting HIV/AIDS-related research for over 25 years and is currently collaborating with his longtime colleague and partner, Dr. Dolcini, conducting research on the translation of basic research to prevention concepts and the translation of prevention programs to real-world settings.
Thank you very much, and thanks for staying. I appreciate that. I don't have anything to disclose at the moment. The project that I'm reporting on today is actually a larger study, a translation study, looking at the translation of the RESPECT HIV Behavioral Prevention Program in agencies, Departments of Public Health and CBOs in the United States. This is being disseminated as part of the CDC's DEBIS program. The focus of the larger study is really looking at program fidelity, which is, if you follow the translation research, program fidelity has a lot of different dimensions to it. In this particular context, we're looking at compliance fidelity, which has to do with whether or not people are actually implementing the program the way it was intended to be implemented. So are they doing what they need to be doing? Today, I'm presenting some data that's looking at linkages between the economic downturn that has affected public health in so many different ways. And roll down into basically producing major fiscal losses for specific behavioral prevention programs, which in turn cause agencies to adapt to these losses in some way. And I'm looking at the adaptations that the agencies make and the impact this has on program fidelity. So economic downturn of 2008, unless you've been sleeping for a lot of years, we've lost major tax revenues. There's been job losses in public health. And the cuts have been most severe among population-based primary prevention programming. National data for local health departments shows that about 25% of programs were cut, prevention programs were cut in 2009, and this has been at around 10 to 20% per year since then. In contrast, epi and surveillance, there's been some cuts, but it has been at a slightly more moderate level of under 10% per year. The RESPECT program, if you're not familiar with it, is a brief counseling program, 20 to 30 minutes in length, 1 to 2 sessions. It's client-centered, clinic-based generally, has been around for quite a while, has good efficacy data behind it. It has three essential core components, which are important to the fidelity outcome measure I'm going to talk about today. Risk assessment, risk prevention analysis, and negotiating a risk reduction plan. So all this gets done in a very brief session, follows a very specific format. Ideally, this should be done with a client that has some kind of risk factor or risk marker for HIV. So just to reiterate what I mentioned earlier, I'm looking at how has the economic downturn impacted agencies conducting RESPECT. What types of adaptations have agencies made, and have these adaptations impacted program fidelity? Our study is based on a small national sample. It's a qualitative study. This is not quantitative. We have 30 agencies, of which 15 reported a fiscal loss for the RESPECT program. And it's those 15 agencies that I'm reporting on today. 9 of those are Departments of Public Health, and 6 are CBOs. As a qualitative study, we used semi-structured interviews. We interviewed executive directors all the way down to the counselors that are implementing the program. In addition, we have a client exit survey of for these 15 agencies, roughly around 500-600 clients who are reporting on what happened in the counseling sessions. So that's a very brief assessment, about 5 minutes, happens after the first counseling session. The fidelity index, so it's measuring what happened during the sessions. We have a individual level score that's developed, and then we bump those up to an agency level score. At the individual level, we have a bunch of very specific questions that the clients answer in terms of what happened to them while they were in the session. And you add these up in a particular way, and there's a nice handout that's provided electronically. I don't know how you access those, but it's there. clients that say that everything that we've asked about happened get a score of 6. That's high fidelity. If nothing happened, they get a score of 0. We take those scores and then we look at the number of clients in the agency who had 6s, who had high fidelity scores, and we just compute a simple percentage. What percentage of clients actually got the full program? That's what we're determining. So when you get to that level, it's a percentage. It runs from 0 to 100, with 100 being highest fidelity possible. So I'm looking at a lot of different pieces of data here. I'll bounce around a little bit. Talking to the executive directors, it was very clear that executive directors at these 15 agencies that had taken a big fiscal hit were still all interested in sustaining the program. They didn't want to let it go or see it fall to the side. They thought it was important. These agencies varied in terms of fidelity from a low of 27 to a high of 88, 88 meaning that 88% of the clients were actually getting the full program. And this is adjusted for risk, so this is 88% of clients who had some kind of risk factor. We did a cut at about two-thirds. So we were saying a third, people who are at the top third of the range, we're calling higher fidelity, and below that is lower fidelity. So scores above and below 66. The first question we asked was, is the magnitude of the fiscal loss related to program fidelity? We don't have a quantitative assessment. We have qualitative reports on the degree of loss. Our analysis of this suggests that there isn't much of a relationship between the degree of cut that they took and the fidelity scores. It looks to be more of a relationship between the kinds of adaptations that are made after those cuts are implemented. I'll give you a couple of examples. Here's an agency that had a fidelity score of 88, which was at the top. This executive director is saying, our agency has lost all funding for prevention education activities. Now we're only funded for the raw cost of HIV testing. At the other end of the spectrum, an agency with a score of 27, which is very low. Previously, the state provided a significant portion of the funding for behavioral prevention programs. These funds have been slashed 80% since 2007. So everybody's taking a hit. What happens after they take the hit is what looks to be important. So agencies have made three general categories of adaptations based on our content analysis and the questions we were asking folks. One is just agency level changes or modifications. So it's usually somebody in an administrative position asked to make these. These aren't counselors making these decisions. But these are decisions to basically cut personnel, so reduce staff size, perhaps increase workload with the staff that you have, do more for less. I love that phrase. reducing the number of clients, as well as decreasing workload in some cases. A big cluster of agencies use those kinds of adaptations. Less common were programmatic level changes, such as changing the program structure in some way, or changing key program components. Now again, keep in mind, this is in relationship to the fiscal loss related to the program. That's the context of the questions that are being asked here. There may be other things that happened in an agency that may have led to programmatic changes, as well as other things that may be related to fidelity, and we're just looking at one pathway here. The other kind of change was more direct fiscal remedies. So all these things have fiscal implications, but some people made more direct fiscal changes. These included resource sharing with other agencies, intra-agency resource sharing, most notably taking money from the HIV testing program and using that to support their behavioral research activities. Other fiscal remedies, including rolling costs to the next fiscal year and obtaining support from various kinds of external sources to keep things limping along. Looking at the agencies who were in the lower two-thirds, these are folks with fidelity scores under 66, about 9 agencies there. 6 of these 9 agencies all reported that what they did was they cut, they increased workload and cut staff. So what this busy little slide shows you, second column is the type of agency, Department of Public Health, CBO. Fidelity scores are in the third column, ranging from low to high. There was one agency that didn't provide client data, and that's just shown at the bottom there. Then in the second panel to the right, there are the various adaptations, cutting staff, cutting services, increasing or decreasing workload. Okay, and what we see in the agencies that are the pink rows, and I apologize to people who are red, green, colorblind, these all look gray to you, but in the pink rows, you'll see under increased workload, those are all the agencies who essentially ramped up the workload, and most of them did that because they cut their staff. When we look at the high fidelity agencies, This is in the lower part of the table. The pink rows there, all of those are agencies that have higher fidelity scores. And what they did was not cut staff. They did not increase the workload. What they did was they managed to squeeze some money out of somewhere. And they all have higher fidelity scores. An exception is the gray row. This is an agency that cut staff, but they also cut services. Okay, so they're seeing fewer clients, and the end result was that they actually decreased the workload on people. So part of this kind of qualitative work is not necessarily to come to conclusions about what is, but actually to generate hypotheses that are testable in other contexts. They do have policy implications, but it's this policy stuff or the hypothesis-generating element that's the most crucial. Now, the data that I just showed you is coming from clients and executive directors and fiscal managers, and that we also talked to the counselors, the implementers, and asked them what things were like at the agency. And you get some very interesting kind of corroboration of the other data. So here's an agency with a relatively low fidelity score of 45, and the counselor is saying, well, with all the cutbacks, morale is just a little bit low. We wish we had more time with the clients. The interviewer says, okay, given the time you have, would you say it's a practical program to be running? No, it's not. It's ceased to be practical. Another agency is there are two counselors. Again, a low fidelity score. One counselor saying, it's just less money with less staff trying to do the same thing. Another counselor saying, you know, times are tough, cutbacks and all, morale is down. In the higher fidelity agencies, you don't hear any of this negative stuff, which you hear very positive statements. I think respect has made us a lot more confident because of the structure. Is it a useful intervention? Yes, very. Has it affected morale? Oh, it's actually made me a better person. I'm using it in my own life. I mean, those are really positive, affirmative statements, right? And likewise, for the high fidelity agencies, you're getting these really positive statements about the program, its impact on the counselor, and the impact on clients. So, essentially what we found is that most agencies are adapting by making organizational changes in staff and service levels. Another cluster is making changes to creative financing strategies, and a very small number are actually making changes in the program proper, which you don't really want people to do. So the hypothesized pathway that we're looking at is a very simple one. It's basically saying you cut staff, you increase workload, you increase stress, and the increased work stress is leading to poor job performance and lower program fidelity. Okay, that's one simple pathway. I'll talk a little bit about alternative hypotheses if there's questions on that. On the positive side, if you have a balanced workload, you have some small capital infusion, you've got moderate to lower work stress, you've got happy employees, basically. You get good job performance, you get high fidelity. Now, one of the things I didn't point out, but if you were really quick to look at those tables, the departments of public health tended to be in the lower end of the fidelity spectrum, also more likely to cut personnel, whereas the CBOs are more likely to try to make some kind of fiscal changes. Of course, this brings up the obvious, which is, you know, the mandates and the regulations that are on departments of public health are going to impact the adaptation decisions that they're going to make. And they have to move down a certain pathway, and that pathway leads to poor program fidelity. It's not a good situation. The research that we have does fit a larger body of work in community mental health, which is looking at sustainability of program fidelity. And from that literature, you see organizations with greater decisional flexibility are better able to adapt in ways that sustain program fidelity. This happens particularly when staff continue to see a program benefit, both personally, you know, with respect to the client, when there's fiscal supports, both inter- and intra-agency supports of some kind that you can draw on, and the program continues to fit the agency procedures and goals. So I'm going to stop there because I think I'm out of time. Thank you.